everyone. Welcome to the 10x Growth Strategies podcast. I'm your host, Sharada Sriram, Business Technology Strategist. We have with us Nirupama Vaidyanathan Sanjeevi. Nirupama is a former professional tennis player, a respected media commentator, an accomplished author, and an influential coach. Today, we explore the multifaceted world of tennis through the experiences and insight of a true veteran of the game and talk about her maiden book, The Moonballer. Nirupama's career spans over decades and continents, and her story is one of perseverance, excellence, and passion for the sport of tennis. To highlight a couple of her long list of playing credentials, Nirupama Vaidyanathan was the first Indian woman, the first Indian woman to win a round in the main draw at a Grand Slam, achieving this milestone at the Australian Open in 1999. She held the position of India's number one female tennis player from 1991 to 2002, representing the country in prestigious events like the Fed Cup, also known as the Billie Jean Cup now, Olympics, Asian Games, South Asian Federation Games, and the World Youth Cup. Welcome to our podcast, Nirupama.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Nirupama, let's talk about what was the initial spark and inspiration for you to write the book, Moonballer?
There were a couple of reasons, actually. The first one is I really enjoyed writing from a young age. I've written, even when I was on the tour as a teenager, I have written some articles. I actually wrote an article called On the Road for Indian Express while I was 19 and 20 years old. It was about my life on tour because it was such a unique story. Nobody else had played professional tennis from India before. And I got an opportunity to write about it. It was a bi-weekly column. And I got some very great feedback from people because it was such a unique story. And I was able to communicate in a very easy way. And people were looking forward to that column every fortnight. So I have been writing for many magazines before, and after I competed in the Commonwealth Games in 2010, which was my comeback trail, I felt it was time to write the book, and because I had so many stories from my travels, I felt would be a great read for people, because unless you put it together in paper, it's very hard for people to, even for my own recollection, it's very hard. So I wanted to make sure I put it together in a book. That was one reason. The other reason was there was some speculations about people who was the first Indian woman and all these kind of small speculations around. And I wanted to put that to rest. So those are the two main reasons that I decided to write the book, Moonballer. Yeah.
That's great to hear. I'm glad you have it on print. And it was a fantastic read. So I really enjoyed reading the book, especially I have seen you play tennis with the wooden racket also, and also coach your daughter. So it was fantastic to see all that come together. One of the key themes of this book that really impressed me was your father playing your coach and the personal significance, right, of this process. Can you talk to us a little bit about the inspiration that he was to you and the whole process of coaching?
Yes, he was completely instrumental in my entire tennis career. And you have to imagine the 1980s in Coimbatore. First of all, you have to deal with cultural problems. You have to deal with less facilities. You have to deal with all these things. And here was a man with a vision. And he was never going to give up with anything. Number one thing is he himself was not a tennis player. He was a Ranji Trophy cricket player. He used to play billiards. He used to dab into a lot of things, but he picked up tennis after he was 30 years old. The thing about him was he would pick up a sport at any time and he would be able to coach a person in it because he would get so adept at it. He would really understand the nuances and he could start coaching. So he had that talent. And since he was a little, dejected by the whole politics of sport in cricket at that time, because he was from a district and he didn't get the due that he should have, because I have literally spoken to so many people and everybody said that he should have played for India. He never got the chance because of all the politics around. So he wanted us to pick up an individual sport and he basically took it upon himself to coach us. And he was also impressed by Ramesh Krishnan, Ramanathan Krishnan especially. And he had actually heard him talk a few times about how you need to maintain your own tennis court. So we didn't have the land for it. We did not have the means for it. We would go in a scooter and he would get all these old balls from all these clubs. And he maintained a tennis court just for us from one of his friends who gave him the land to maintain it. So he had a completely different vision, a different thought process, and we would play, and he was himself self-taught. As I said, he has attended a few tennis symposiums around whenever they were available, but it wasn't like as if it was a trial and error, it was an experiment. But obviously when we started playing tournaments, we got to know that we're not doing that badly, even though he was himself self-taught, and he would clip all these instructions that used to come in the magazine about tennis coaching. It was called Stan Smith Tennis Coaching. There was just one page of it. He would clip it all and maintain a book of it, and he would teach us from that. So thinking about all that, about how remarkable it is now when we realize, because we have everything, we have all the facilities, and I mean, it's much easier for people now. But at that time, we didn't even have TV to look at how somebody played. I mean, we would have to go somewhere else to watch a Wimbledon final. I mean, it was a different world. And to have that kind of a vision and to do what he did, it's really quite remarkable. And the other thing is also that he was, when I was starting to win national titles and those kind of things, that was also the time when I was in my 10th grade, 12th grade. And studies is very important in India, no question about it. But I still played tennis every single day, even if I had an exam, because he also taught us how to time manage and everything. And at one point, I remember, because this is just a very different kind of parent, he was telling me, if it's too difficult for you to write the exam this month, you can wait 6 months to write the next public exam of the 10th grade. And I said, Dad, I want to just be done with this right now. So I had a parent who was ready to encourage the talent that I had. So I was definitely super lucky, not just that he was my coach, but also he had the vision to say, okay, you can write it, but you have the flexibility. So I never felt I had to over push myself and prove myself for anything, because he was, and the same thing, after a match, I would come out, if I had lost a match, he has never, ever raised his voice or put any pressure on me. So I never had to justify myself to him. So he was a perfect role model as a parent and coach. And so he gave me this thing as to how I need to coach and how I need to be as a parent. So it's one of those things that I'm just amazed at how good he did both.
He was a complete maverick, and it's extremely inspiring to listen to this story and how you take, I would love great inspiration from him, as you're also a coach right now.
Yes. In fact, I also have to mention that he was also a lawyer. He was also a lawyer, and he would try to, put all his work also at the right time so that he can come out at 4:30 to come teach us. Wow. So it was very interesting. Yeah.
The entire narrative of your book is not entire. I should take that back. The earlier narrative of your book, or the setting, was in this small town called Coimbatore. Of course, I wouldn't call it a small town. I remember it used to have the highest per capita income in the 80s. You turned pro from there and then moved to Europe. And all your travels have also contributed to your career. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So when I had passed out from my 12th grade, we had a huge decision to make, whether to go pro, whether to go to college. College tennis remains a huge pull for tennis players, because you get a full scholarship, you're able to get a really good education in a top school. So, but at that time, we decided that we wanted to do something that hasn't been done before. We have seen so many players from India who had gone to the US and had played college tennis, but they disappeared right after because of, so many different factors. especially girls' tennis was done at 25, 26 at that time, women's tennis, pro tennis. So we wanted to do something. And so that's when we decided there was an offer from an academy in Europe for me to go train there. So we decided we would do that. But it so happened when I went to Europe, it just so happened that that academy closed down. So dad sent me with mom to Europe, and here we were stuck in Europe with nothing. So we were in a very dire situation as to what we wanted to do. We could have easily come back to India and, you know, dealt with it. But there were no tournaments in India. I had won about 5 or 6 national championships already. And there was nothing for me to actually do in India. And there were not enough international tournaments. And for pro tennis, my dad was convinced I had to go to Europe. Why Europe? Because of the proximity to tournaments. If you're able to basically base yourself somewhere in Europe, the chances are you know, it's amazing. So it was just so lucky that I found a tennis academy who was willing to train me. And it just so happened mom came back and I stayed with a family in Europe. That's when everything started, in the sense like it was all trial and error. I don't think my parents knew the whole extent of how dangerous it could be. I was 18 years old. I didn't have as much money either. I was staying with a family. The family situation was very safe. And I trained with a Swedish tennis academy called Estes. And my coaches were amazing. So I kind of lucked out in certain ways in how safe that situation was. But the minute I started traveling in Europe, so I stayed in Luxembourg. Luxembourg was the country. It's surrounded by Belgium, France, and Germany. And so I lived for 2 years in that accommodation with a family as a you know, paying guest, and I could cook my own food. So here was coming of age kind of thing. So I would go to Switzerland. I would go to Spain to play. I would have to take trains into most places. It was a lot of harrowing experiences that I had, and I had to learn how to self-preserve, in the sense like I had to learn how to dress. I had to learn how not to travel too late at night. I've had some very, very close calls in Amsterdam and Rotterdam. Actually, in the middle of the night, the train had a strike. So I was stuck at 2 a.m. in a station with drug addicts and prostitutes everywhere. So it was very, very harrowing. And I don't think many kids today can imagine that, because especially after you've seen the movie Taken, it's it's a very, very close call. But it also taught me how to learn to be aware of my surroundings, how to survive on my own, and these kind of things. But, you know, and the end of the day, I also had to get my own visa everywhere. Understand that. So I had to plan ahead. I had no one traveling with me. I had to do my tickets, my visas, take care of everything else, and play tennis. So it was definitely one of the biggest coming of age experiences, and I just cannot tell you how it made me as a person. So I started with no ranking, and by the end of the 2 years, I basically was one in the top 200. I could play the Grand Slam. So it took me 2 years to get there, but it was definitely perseverance of the highest order, because I would see my parents once or twice a year at the maximum. So it was a challenging time. And especially from somebody who was brought up in a very conservative background in Coimbatore, for my parents to have let me do that, it's a remarkable story.
It absolutely is a remarkable story. What amazes me is how resourceful you were in the pre-internet era, you know?
Yes, yes. No mobile phones, not even an ATM card at that time. Imagine that. So there was even a particular situation, I will tell you this, I have written in my book as well, about how I did not have money to pay for the hotel room the next day. So I had to, there was a doubles match. If I had won that match, I would still not make enough money to cover my hotel expenses. So I basically have to tank that match because I didn't have money. And there was not a place where you could go and take money out of any bank you wanted. There's no ATM cards. So it's a very crazy situations. Yeah,
you absolutely are an inspiration, and you know, having known you personally as well as you know, reading the book, it gave me so many nuggets. thank you for writing the book. Were there any other specific influences, such as players or strategies or any personal experience outside of the travel ones that you talked about that shaped your career on turning pro?
Definitely. Obviously, I've spoken about my dad. I also had a lot of, you know, my brother was constantly training with me. So he was definitely somebody I looked up to. He was so fit. By the time he was 17, 18, he was showing me what fitness should be about. I was never the most fittest person. That was always something I had to work on. So he would be like, we lived right behind race course in Coimbatore. So he would be running 2-3 laps around race course. And here I was, you know, struggling to catch up. But training with my brother all the time, always I could always know where I had to get to. So that was a huge, huge inspiration. The other thing is also my cousins. I was, my cousins, KG Ramesh and KG Suri. They were already very, very good players in India. And I always tried to mimic my brother, KG Ramesh, because he was my hero at that time, how he would play and everything. So these are all like influences in India. And also I was surrounded by so many good players in Coimbatore. I practiced in Cosmopolitan Club. That whole situation was phenomenal, because all these members, they would give up their spot if they knew I had a tournament. They were so giving, and they would play with me all the time. And I was in a very nurturing environment in Coimbatore. There's no two ways about it. And when I went to Europe, I also had a few coaches in that Estes Tennis Academy, but a particular coach called Anders. He was working with me a lot. He was the most diligent guy. He was the most sincere person. And the most hilarious thing is I have taken my daughter now to train with him from time to time, because there are times that I feel like a different perspective is needed. And he has remained the same. The last 25 years, he does not go down in his intensity is the same. I've had times when I used to cry on the court because he would push me so much, but I needed my daughter also to feel that intensity a little bit. So these people are the, and then eventually I also trained with David O'Meara, who was also one of my coaches when I moved to the US. So he also had a huge impact on me. So my coaches are something I was very lucky with. My dad, then Anders, and then David. So they're all such great influence, such great personalities that I was really lucky, and it's God given, I think, to find coaches who were so meaningful, and also their character was so strong that I really was able to look up to them and learn from them.
Thank you for sharing those experiences. What really, you know, impressed me most outside of your father, you know, being your coach, is also you making a comeback at 33 to become the first Indian woman to represent, Indian mother, not my, to represent India. So talk to us about that process, because I'm sure that was a big challenge too.
Yeah, it was. It was. So in 2009, 2010, I believe it was like 2008 or 9 when the Supreme Court actually made a law saying that people who were born in the US, there were two or three girls who were playing for India at that time. And also there were one or two men as well. And the Supreme Court made a ruling that people who were born in the US could not compete for India anymore. You had to be born in India and have an Indian passport to compete for India. I still had my Indian passport at that time. I was living in the US. And my daughter Sahana was like 2 or 3 years old. So when the Supreme Court came up with that, there was a sudden void left in Indian tennis. And the Commonwealth Games and Asian Games in 2010 was coming up, and they didn't have enough people to fill that gap. So I decided, I would at least try to play doubles and help out, and I could do that. And it was for my own satisfaction as well, to see if I could compete, if I could do that. So it was a challenge for me, and I really enjoyed training. But what a couple of things that I did not plan for was what the body can, we were still at a stage where, yes, we had a little bit of recovery things that we were doing, massage, all these things. But it was very hard to get back into shape because especially I had a very rough pregnancy and I was not I was not in the best of shape. So for me to get back into actually playing and to play for India, I had to actually go back and train over there and also beat the girls there to be able to be eligible on the team. And I did that. So, but to get there, it took a lot and it wasn't easy. I was just helped a lot by my parents at that time and to take care of Sahana while I could go and actually, you know, compete and go on a training camp in Pune. I remember that. But the other flip side, it was an amazing experience. I got to play in India. I got to play in Commonwealth Games, Asian Games. But the flip side to that was when I was at the Asian Games in Guangzhou, China, Sahana had pneumonia. She caught pneumonia the last minute. We were in China, middle of nowhere. And here I was trying to play for India. And the doctors on site kept saying that it was a viral fever. But I was unsure about it. And I finally went to the hospital and they did say pneumonia. And they were saying that she needs to get admitted. So these kind of things really forced me to think, do I really need to do this? Do I really need to play? Because my daughter's health and my daughter's well-being is far more important to me than, you know, playing and those kind of things. So as a mom, it, you know, it felt great to do all this, but at the same time, it gave me a reality check as to what is more priority in life. And I think it all depends on your support structure and stuff like that. There are actually 7 to 8 women on the tour right now who are playing, you know, a full schedule and they're top 100 in the world and they're making their living through tennis. So why is this possible? Because they all travel as a team. They're able to do things as a team. And the prize money nowadays is about 10 times more than when I played. So there is an incentive. And number two, also the recovery processes are so good that women beyond the age of 30 are still playing, 35. Plenty of women still playing at that age. So it was very different from when I did it to now. And I think that's the main thing. I would just say it as it was amazing to come back, but I don't think I want to go back and compromise my child's health.
You made a couple of good call outs. One is great support system. Of course, the prize money has increased tremendously, which yes. also helps. Reflecting on your journey, what advice would you give to aspiring tennis professionals, especially young girls? You have one in the family too.
Correct. So basically, when I used to live in India, they used to, when I used to win tournaments as a 14, 15 year old, the first thing they would tell me, okay, don't let this get to your head, be humble. So it's actually I don't believe that is the right advice. Because as a sportsperson, you need confidence. I'm not talking about being haughty and arrogant. I just feel like you need to have certain amount of confidence because you have to go on court and actually beat an opponent. And many of these opponents are out there to kill you. And you can't go there and try to be humble. Oh, nice, and be nice. This is professional tennis. This is a dog-eat-dog world. And I would say it's even worse than the men's tour. The women are very, very, I would say, very driven. That's a nice way to put it. You can't do that. So what I would tell a young tennis player, a young female tennis player is, I would tell them, be confident. Go after your dreams and set short and long-term goals and go after them. And there is no shortcut to hard work. So you have to have these set of things and just be confident. And I will never ask you to be humble.
That is some sage advice. You know, I absolutely believe in being assertive and I'm glad that's what you are passing on to the next generation. Do you have plans for a sequel to Moonballer? And are you working on any other projects that you can share with us?
Yes. So I founded Nehru's Tennis Academy in California in 2004. And which I ran with my brother. And I also was a tennis director in a club here in Florida. But I kind of took a backseat and I focused only on my biggest project was with my daughter. during COVID 2020 is when she decided that she wanted to play a good high level level of tennis, and she wants to play college tennis. So the thing is, I never wanted to push it on my daughter just because there's so much of stuff around. I wanted the fire to come from within, and it didn't come till 2020 when she was about 13. So we kind of started her journey a little late, but from absolutely, again, from almost nothing, no ranking, now she's ranked 217 in the world. And she is sought after from many colleges. We are yet to make the decision on the college. But to get there, I mean, it's taken us, a big chunk of time and effort from both our, our sides. So I've documented that journey quite a bit, and I will be publishing that soon. And I also feel like, tennis has two sides. One is the technical side. One is the planning side. What tournaments to play? What kind of training you should do? What does a player need? You know, short-term goals, long-term goals. How do we entirely do the whole planning side of it? So I feel like I can really help people quite a bit. And so I'm going to start a consulting company called tennisconsulting.com. It's still a work in progress. But I hope to start it by April and help especially juniors who do not know which system to go after, USTA, AITA, or UTR, those kind of things. So I'm working on it as we speak, and I'm going to help a lot of junior players, and that's my hope. And I also, since I've documented some of those, my blog, I will basically be updating that, and that will also be something for parents to take some cues from as to what to do, what not to do with their child.
Thank you, Nirupama. You have always been an inspiration. Thank you for very graciously sharing, your journey in the book, The Moonballer. It's a fantastic read, as well as speaking with us today. I want to express my gratitude to our listeners and, of course, our guest, Nirupama. Your curiosity and engagement drive this podcast. I'm excited to continue this journey of exploration and discovery with each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.